don't like violation of civil liberties. They want criminal justice reform, whether it's left or right. They're very worried about empire abroad and all the waste in the government and the Pentagon and elsewhere. So he's tapping into it. He now needs to broaden out. He's got to have a corporate crime policy, not just a Wall Street, anti-Wall Street policy. And he's got to deal with military and foreign policy. Everybody that I know of in the progressive world are waiting to see how he's going to take on Hillary Clinton, the master corporatist and the master militarist, the latest being the turmoil in Libya spilling over Africa. That was Hillary's war against the recommendation.
Ralph
of Nader,
I want to thank you for being
Gates.
With us. I'm Amy Goodman, our website, democracynow.org.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is Friday, September the 18th, and we're here live in the studio at Henry Ford College, where our studios are based usually, and we're having great fun. Today I have in the studio with me our my usual co-host, John Conroy, the WHFR News Director. It's mic check time, John. Say hello.
Yes, hello, Jay.
Okay, boy, we got you loud and strong there. Okay, that's good. And also we're joined by a WHFR staff member who is returning to the staff and will be here with Joanne Kraczynska during the Blue Show today. And she's known on the air as Kitty Love. So welcome. Say hello. See if your microphone's on.
Hello, everybody out there.
That's that mellifluous voice that she has. And, of course, she's a Dearborn resident. John's a resident of Gros Isle Township. I live in Dearborn. So we've got a lot of opinions here about the stories, because that's what we do here. We talk about Dearborn, the surrounding areas, the headline stories as we can find them. And it's not just the newspapers, because the I'm sorry to say that, as I said in past, the two Dearborn weekly papers are just not covering the stories like they used to. And that means that we have to go to other sources on the internet and sometimes go places ourselves and act like reporters. Ooh, volunteer reporters, of course. In fact, I wanted to segue from that. John, you were giving me some updates last week, I think, off air, about Gros Isle Township. You've lost your commercial newspaper, if I may call it that, and you're hoping to get people together to try to reorganize something on a volunteer basis. How did that go? That was like last Monday you had a
right.
meeting?
It was this past Monday, and the meeting is, we had the meeting and we had interesting people show up to give contributions to that. Mm-hmm. And so far we haven't decided what we're going to do as an independent group, but we are contributing Gros Isle News to the Trenton Tribune, which is a monthly, once a month published newspaper.
Okay.
So, and that's an easier way out so far, but we've got...
Yeah, as long as they publish your stories, yeah. And of course, if you're just volunteers and you're not charging them any money for them, why wouldn't they?
So far, so good. Okay. And the last issue of September...
Well, and it might help them pick up some subscriptions on the island there.
Sure enough. And okay. this September issue, for example, there's a good story about our horseback riding field trip with kids from the Luton Riding Academy on Gros Isle. As well as some other stories that highlight bicycling
that's good.
Events
yeah.
as well.
So. Some really, really good papers that not just cover the events and you know, and the soft news, but also what's going on at the city council and the school boards there. You were suggesting you'd be willing to volunteer to cover some of the sporting events in
right.
Gros Isle, so that would be cool too, of course. But hard news, I think, is what we're lacking, the information that actually relates to how we're governed and who we might elect the next time, or how we might give input to those governing us on what they should do. yeah, they got elected, but I really think it's good to keep in touch, not just let them go crazy as if we're not paying attention.
And we plan to have what I call Cub reporters add their, go to the sources and get the info and deliver it either to the Trenton Trib or to our own effort, which we, like I said, is still kind of in the infancy.
Yeah, I'd suggest that, that you keep organized as a group yourselves in terms of making sure that certain things are covered, and then you can have people individually send them to the Trenton paper, of course, but it's good to stay organized, so make sure you're covering what's going on,
lots of collectively. Different bases. Oh, yeah.
And if somebody's out of town, then somebody else in your group could cover that event. Yeah,
you bet.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's great. Yeah. Sorry to see that Gros Isle, it is an island, folks, and there's only two roads that cross over from our mainland to Gros Isle, and one of them was closed down yesterday because of a traffic accident. I think it was in the morning. It's actually a friend of yours that was unfortunately in that accident.
Yes, he was. We have lots of construction outside the county bridge right now, narrowing the Jefferson Avenue road that travels into Trenton from Van Horn Road into one lane. So it makes it a long traffic jam now with a lot of people trying to get back on there. And yes, yesterday morning there was a small crane-operated truck that kind of missed its spot and swung too far out into the roadway and took off literally the top of a car that was coming onto the island.
That your friend was in.
And my friend Carl.
And he wasn't driving a convertible before that.
No, he wasn't. But,
no, and no. That's thankfully. That's, but he's okay. Will be okay. Maybe
he was in that. He was. They brought him over to South Shore Hospital in Trenton. I didn't hear until this morning that he is okay. I mean, he does have some cuts and scrapes in his head.
Well, I'm sure a lot of shock trauma from an accident like that.
Yeah. Sure, but he is
just driving along, and all of a sudden your roof is ripped off, and your car is stopped because of that, So that's very upsetting. But and the other, now that's the bridge, you might say, on the west side of the island, or from the east side of the mainland, and
we call it the south side.
South side?
Yeah, south side.
Oh,
island.
Okay. And the pay bridge is
on the north,
further north.
On the very farthest north end of the island.
How much does that cost? Is it yet? Do you get a card?
You can buy a card. If
you're a resident,
If you're a resident, there's also tokens, and one crossing without anything special is $250.
Oh my gosh!
It's $250 a crossing.
That's a lot. So if you were commuting,
right,
that would be a lot for 5 days and back and forth.
If you were to buy the pass, it's around $2 a pass.
No wonder everybody wants to wait in line on the public bridge, even though it's only one lane.
Yeah,
and that's why you got here a little later today, huh?
Oh, there was
another traffic jam.
Reasons, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That doesn't help when the bridge opens up too, and then you're waiting to get across that bridge.
Matty Maroon going to build you another bridge down there, maybe?
No, I don't think so. Not too soon.
Because he'd probably charge you $10 each way.
Yeah.
I just went to Canada, and they're charging $5 U.S. or $6.25 Canadian each way.
To go across.
Is not bad if you're going to the whole big country of Canada. So $5 is not bad, but because you probably wouldn't be doing it every day. I'm not sure if they have discount cards for multiple passes or something for people that, have jobs in the other country on a regular basis. I'm not sure about that. It's a radio story, but for a while, the famous radio DJ over here, and he's retired now for 5 to 8 years, I guess, Dick Purton, he was at a Canadian station in Windsor, and broadcasting was it the AM station? Kitty Love might remember. Dick Purton went over there anyway. It really strong signal that covered the whole area. It's not 89X, but it was I think the AM station at the bottom of the dial, 800 AM.
Yeah, I think it was 800.
Yeah, and he was over there for a while, so he had to drive every day, and come back every day. But of course, they were paying him six figures, as they say, and I guess he could afford the change across the bridge. Although maybe they sent a limo for him or something. I don't know. Because he was the highest paid DJ in Detroit for several years in the days when they really were paying DJs a lot of money. Anyway, moving on, folks, in our stories here, that's the Gros Isle report in a nutshell. And a couple things happening in Dearborn that aren't in the papers necessarily yet. Let me grab one or two here. One thing that showed up in the newsletter from the city of Dearborn, and again, that's available by email. If you just give the city of Dearborn your email address, they will send you an email copy, and it's all pretty pictures and so on. But one of the stories you'll see soon is that we now have a new business district advocate. And I say business district because they're hoping one of her job goals is to unite the Downtown Development Authority for East Dearborn with the Downtown Development Authority from West Dearborn to make it all one development authority. In the past, you know, years, since there was two groups, they were sometimes arguing back and forth. Say, well, you get this special thing and we don't get that, and you know, you had a good idea and didn't share it with us or something. So if they have one leader and one organization for both, then they'll all sort of share in the ideas. Maybe, for example, if there's a Mexican festival plan for Cinco de Mayo next year or something, it'll be both in East and West Dearborn. If they have a Mexican restaurant in East Dearborn, I don't know. But I'm just saying there's possibilities there. And what they did, they spared no expense. The woman they hired in this case, her name is Christina Shepherd Desius. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's a hyphenated last name, Shepherd, S-H-E-P-P-A-R-D, hyphen D-E-C-I-U-S. Now, I'm going to call it Shepherd Desius. Well, I can call her Christina, I guess. I don't know her, but apologies if that's too intimate. She is now the executive director of just the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority, but she's working on that transition, as I said. And I think that's a great idea. They actually had to hire her away from Ferndale Downtown Development Authority, and she brought national attention and investment to downtown Ferndale in Oakland County. So she, a lot of good things that I've heard indirectly about these kinds of projects in Ferndale, and so she was the leader that was organizing it for the city and coordinating it. And so they're actually putting a little money out. They got a great leader, and we'll see what happens. It's actually about a three-page story here, which I won't read in detail. But everybody's excited, especially the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority right now. But even people from the East Downtown Development Authority are glad to see her be able to arrive. I wonder where her office is going to be, in East or West. That would be, you know, it's like, well, you're partial to them because your office is on that side of town. So I guess they have to put her in the center somewhere, really.
Maybe give her a loft and art space or something.
Well, that's on the east side, though. See, that's partisan.
Close.
Yeah. But I think that's a great thing. I don't know if it was in the planning stages before. Since we don't get regular reports from the newspapers about the city council meetings. By the way, I did check. I know I've been saying for several weeks, it's too bad the papers don't cover that regularly. It's true, a lot of those meetings can be very dull and boring. I watched about half of the video. The videos are on the cityofdearborn.org website. You have to scroll way, way down and click on CDTV, public meetings, and so on. But they do have the videos there. I have to say, their video cameras are still the small format, you know, like from the 1950s, the rectangles, but not the wide rectangles that everybody broadcasts with today. And you say, well, that's not a problem. But they're shooting the city council, so you have to be back really far to get all seven members in, plus the city clerk, in one long shot. So you can't even see them in the long shot because of the format. And the transitions, you know, they go from close-ups to the wide shot, which you have to do because the wide shot, you barely see the faces. And when they transition, I happen to know this technologically, they've got a problem with the switching device they use. It's a frame buffer device, which is the cheaper kind, and it must be an old one because it's malfunctioning. So as it's going from one shot to the other, you get all this pixelated still frame images, I mean, all different colors and bars, and which is kind of cool, except you don't know what the heck picture it is. I mean, it's a combination, which is, you know, some sort of impressionistic piece, you know, from a great artist somewhere. But it's really a mess. So I don't understand, because, you know, Henry Ford College, our TV production studio, I mean, we're just a college, right? Although we try to have a program that's up with current technology. We have, you know, high-resolution video cameras, you know, the wide format, and we have switchers that don't have that problem, and we don't have hardly any money. I mean, you know, seriously, our budget is very small. City of Dearborn could do a little upgrade there to make it easier to watch these things. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why they can't get widescreen, you know, the wider format pictures. It just doesn't make sense to me. I know they're trying to run on a budget. They probably just have one person doing the switching and remote controlling the cameras. You know, the cameras these days, you can get them with the zoom and pan controls, all controlled on one panel by one person. And I'm sure that's what they do because they can't afford even to have high school students do it anymore. They used to have Dearborn High School students do it. I don't think they do it because they used to have to pay a minimum wage, and that would break the budget, you know, if they had to do that, I think. So, but the City of Dearborn, I could not find the minutes. I mean, one would think that the minutes of a previous city council meeting, which is public record, I thought, would be published on the website. It's just a text file. You know, after somebody types them up, and they are typed up because they're circulated to the other members of the city council to be approved the next month. I mean, okay, maybe they need to be approved before they go on the website. But not necessarily. It could say not yet approved, you know, temporary or waiting for approval or something, because people might just want to read about the actions and not sit through the boring hour, 2 hour, 3 hour video. I'm just saying. And I made this comment to Dearborn Heights because they have their own cable channel over there, and their minutes are usually 3 or 4 months behind, but at least they're there.
Yeah.
Although, who cares after 3 or 4 months, you know? But okay, so I'm just saying that's the only thing you've got. I just want to tell people, because I'm going to start announcing it from now on, the Dearborn City Council, if you want to go to the meeting itself in the new City Hall, the Dearborn Administrative Center, it's twice a month, and I know the next one is next Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. So you might want to attend. Last month's was, of course, it was August. It was only an hour long, and that video, as I said, is on the city website, but it's hard to watch. Anyway, that's the story about that. Okay, moving on. But go ahead, John.
Yeah, I just got to, you know, at that Dearborn Administrative Center grand opening, the when you spoke about the camera that they were using, it was just one camera that was on the panning the crowd and panning the folks that were talking in the front.
Well, they must have at least a couple cameras, because they were, as I said, transitioning badly between Susan DeBaggia, the president, and the city clerk. And so it couldn't have been one camera. They didn't do a quick pan over for that. So they had more than one camera going. It was just the switching through whatever switching device they had that was malfunctioning, wasn't working properly. But no, that would be really bad if it was one camera, quick pan to the left, pan to the right. You really get dizzy watching that. No, they didn't have that issue, and the sound was good. As a technician here at the radio station, where sound is everything, the sound was good. There was no hum or noise, no scratchiness or whatever, so that wasn't an issue. But it is there on the website. I do recommend folks that if you want to know these issues, or if you even want to make comments, there usually is time for some public comments at the end, go ahead, go on over there.
I also had
Tuesday 7:30. Okay. Go ahead, John.
Well, yeah, and remember we were talking about newspaper editors or reporters that we no longer see anymore, or they have not kept on a number of writers. And Andrea Bloom is a name that I think both you and I have spoken about before. And I had a chance occurrence meeting, running into her through a new choral group that I'm singing in. So now okay. I have a connection with her as far as that's concerned.
And, John knows everybody from somewhere.
I can bring some stories, or get some stories to her, possibly get published. So.
And mentioning public meetings, where I mentioned Tuesday at 7:30, but very important if you're in Dearborn Heights especially, because you're the folks that got to vote on a new, actually three new council persons on November 3rd. Now, there aren't really many local races going on this November. In fact, I'm not even sure the city of Dearborn will even have an election. I'm not sure who's going to be elected. I don't know if anybody's going to be elected. But Dearborn Heights has got three open spots. There's two incumbents running, but there's three other people who are not incumbents that are hoping one of them at least can sneak in there. Usually incumbents get reelected because of name recognition, blah, blah, blah. So the actual debate, if you want to call it, candidate forum is what they call it. It's organized by the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. and it's going to be at the City Council Chambers inside City Hall, 6045 Fenton Road in Dearborn Heights, starting at 7 p.m. Monday. Okay. And the press release from the League of Women Voters indicates those who can't attend can learn more about the candidates in the voter guide at vote411.org. That's good for any election coming up. That actually connects you with the national League of Women Voters website, and then you can narrow it down to Michigan and what city you live in and so on. I think you just put in your zip code and they instantly show you what the ballot for the upcoming election is going to look like and what your choices are. So I'm sure that this video, though, will be made available, certainly on Dearborn Heights Cable TV, and hopefully they might also have it over here, even though we're a totally different city. But I'm just saying, might be interesting to see what some of these issues are and how people hold themselves. There will not be a Trump-type candidate that I know of, but we'll see if somebody starts acting up and going crazy. Anyway, highly recommend that, folks. So Dearborn Heights Candidate Forum, it's the only forum planned. There might be some other ones that will pop up before November, but this is the big one done by League of Women Voters, 7 p.m. Monday night, City Hall, City Council Chambers in Dearborn Heights. Okay. And okay. Well, unfortunately, one of their formats is the member of the State Board of League of Women Voters, Paul Bowman, is going to be the moderator. He's going to ask questions to each candidate, and each has the same amount of time, usually 1 minute, to respond. And that's the unfortunate thing, that 1 minute is not enough time to fully express yourself about anything and your reasons why you have those beliefs. That's the important thing, to judge what is the thought process behind these people's opinions. Maybe they got great sounding opinions, but how did they come to that conclusion? Okay, and because that shows you how intelligent they really are and what their information sources are like. And we don't want to talk about the Republican debate on this show necessarily. I do have Jack Lesenberry makes a comment about how he didn't listen to the last one in one of his pre-recorded comments that we'll be playing maybe later in the show here. But so those are very important things. Also, just because I have the League of Women Voters newsletter from September here, and that's also on their website, which is LWVDDH. League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, LWVDDH.org, and you could see this information yourself, or you could even join the organization yourself, be a member. They want to mention that they're on October 21st at Henry Ford Centennial Library in Dearborn, we're going to have a town hall on redistricting in Michigan. One of the great problems, whether there's Republicans in office during the census time or Democrats, is gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. And it's all Jerry's fault. We know that, right? No, it didn't. No connection there with anybody in particular. But Wednesday, October 21st, 7 p.m., and the League of Women Voters is going to present a debate, and they're partnering with Access and the Dearborn Public Library to discuss this issue. And how do other states draw their districts? Is there a more fair way and more independent way to fairly slice up the voting districts? And of course the answer is absolutely good. There is. The state is badly gerrymandered when the vast majority of voters in the state, in most statewide elections where it isn't gerrymandered, where it's statewide, will be voting Democrat, okay, for the Democratic Party. And yet, in terms of who we elect from these gerrymandered districts to Lansing government, the vast majority, 80%, are Republicans. And that's not because it's because of the gerrymandering, because of the unfair balance. They use fancy computers to delineate exactly where the Republican majority can be, even if it's only by two or three votes. If they have to cut down an alley, make the whole district really long and skinny, or very wide with an L at the end, the computer can do that, and it actually is. That's a way to split up so that a majority of districts give the Republicans a majority, even though they're in the minority in the state. I know, in terms of people who say they're Democrat or Republican, actually the majority now in Michigan call themselves independent. But I'm saying most statewide office, not the governor's race, but most statewide offices, it's a Democrat that's elected. So that's, I'm just saying, that's the preference of the majority of people, except for the office of governor. And that, who can explain that? But anyway, so redistricting Michigan, League of Women Voters, October 21st, a little ways away. Circle your calendars, folks. There's ways to get involved and find out what's going on and share your opinion, because voting is not the only thing. It's not enough. John, would you like to get a story on the top of your tongue there?
I was also going to say right now, this is a good time to say that views expressed by we co-hosts are do not necessarily reflect the views and beliefs of HFC or WHFR.
Or anybody I might play from the computer, too. Right.
There we go.
Okay. And Kitty Love, you have a couple of great stories in front of you there. Do you want to ad lib a couple for us?
Well, that Dearborn used to be the Hyatt Regency, and then it had a couple other names along the way, but I believe it's getting another name. The hotel has is up on the block again.
Well,
and
that's
it's
yeah.
For
if it is
sale.
If it is sold, then they'll probably have to name it something else. Right now, it's called Dearborn Royal or Royal Dearborn.
The Royal the newly named Royal Dearborn okay. Hotel and Convention right. Center. Yeah. And this is coming from BeWickPublications.com.
Yeah, it's probably a press release. And what they wanted to do in that story, because without reporters, you were totally a victim of the press release. And that's what you publish, because you don't know anything. You don't have a reporter. You have no objective opinion, so you publish the press release. The press release says, ooh, they're finding new ways to get bookings for that hotel. Well, of course, to make it more successful, to spread the word that some sort of internet company that's going to spread the word about this hotel name to all the hotel booking sites, because it's a new name, or relatively new name in Dearborn, and maybe some of these sites don't have the update on that. But I read all the way to the end, like a good journalist or a critically thinking person did, and I was totally surprised about the fact the company that bought it for only about $15 million, they say it's Israel-based, although that's incidental, they bought it for about $15 million. They're ready to sell it for $30 to $40 million. And it is, of course, the second largest hotel facility in Michigan, 772 rooms. It's hard to believe they were ever filled, but they were. It was a big deal, you know, when it first happened 30, 40 years ago, whatever. It had a monorail connecting it with the town center, except that was the Ford Motor Company idea of a monorail, so it, the cars ran on little rubber tires on an enclosed concrete road. So in the winter with ice and snow, it couldn't run. It
didn't run.
Because no, they weren't going to get anybody out on the monorail track to shovel it all the way across. It was crazy. You'd think they put at least heating elements in there or something and drains to melt it. No. Mm-hmm. So that's why Ford never really got into the Metro Transit business. They couldn't even understand how to do a monorail properly from the town center to the hotel. I mean, it boggled my mind. But then again, you know, engineers being what they are. You remember the Pinto, John, from the 1960s?
Pinto.
Similar to the crisis, which has just been renewed, recently mentioned again, because GM had to settle, I think, close to $900 million in suits because of the ignition switch problem.
Yeah, they got to pay the government $900 mil. They got to pay the
individual
suits,
settlements
suits,
too.
$500 million something
more,
dollars.
Yeah. Right. And because there were some accidents and injuries caused, and I don't know if loss of life, but there
yes,
was some
loss of life,
loss of life
yes.
too. Yeah, and they knew about it. That's the real problem. Yeah. It wasn't something that it they have total proof now. In fact, it was one particular engineer that, in fact, we just heard on Democracy Now, which precedes the show, folks. They did the details there. That one engineer, somebody on that show, it was their opinion, he should be prosecuted. You know, and be sent to jail if necessary, not just have a fine that GM pays for him, because he lied about the test results, he lied about the reliability of the circuit, he tried to cover it, he did cover it up for a long time, and of course, but even GM, when the accidents started happening, they just let it go. They weren't proactive even after the fact in trying to find, oh, well, it's just a fluke. couple of cars, and then it was more cars and more cars, and so they weren't even proactive in investigating it when it first started. So they're going to pay a fine, but as Democracy Now! Folks stated, maybe something more than that should be done to corporations and those people responsible internally, if known, in terms of harsher punishment, like going to jail, actually. Okay. So I thought that was surprising. Oh, one idea that they had there, and again, this is probably the press release from the Dearborn Royal Hotel, is they said, look, you could, if you want to buy it, you know, you could split it up into a couple of hotels. What's the advantage there, splitting the big hotel into two other hotels? They're right connected together. Is one going to be cheap and the other's going to be expensive? Is that one is going to be a Motel 6 and the other's going to be really, really fancy? And there'll be a wall built between them because you don't want the rich and the poor to interact there on the ground floor. But the final idea was, they suggested, is that the top floors could be redone to be private residences, condos or something, penthouse apartments. And you know, the lower floors could be retail sales. Now, that sort of mixed-use idea is very popular in many cities downtown, like Chicago and Toronto. But there's got to be a neighborhood right around it of other things. You can't just have it sitting out there in the field, not even connected directly to Fairlane Town Center. That I don't see that a mixed-use operation would be that much benefit. I mean, yeah, if there was a grocery store on the ground floor, then the people who lived on the top floor might buy some groceries there in a pinch, like 7-Eleven. But basically, if they can afford the expensive condos at the top of the place, they're not going to shop at 7-Eleven. You know what I'm saying? They'll have their food shipped into them from some gourmet
Whole Foods, maybe.
Well,
self-supportive co-op.
Maybe. Mm, I don't know. Maybe. But well, there's all kinds of possibilities, and it's worth a try, I guess. But the idea is that the real point of the press release, if anybody at the newspaper or present guy would have read it all the way through, it is an amazing story there, is that they want to sell it badly, and they're suggesting all these possibilities, and I wonder if there would be any, like, City of Dearborn issues with mixed use in that building. I mean, if we'd make them money, they'd probably authorize it, you know, but I don't know if we have too many mixed use places right now in Dearborn. It's an idea we haven't tried yet. Anybody want a penthouse apartment in Dearborn? Okay. Moving right along. It's about halfway through the hour, John.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you a question about your trip to Toronto.
Okay.
When I went to Toronto, it was 35 years ago. And when I got there, the public transportation was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to know if that anything has changed as far as that goes.
I mean, how do you want to get somewhere? Let me count the ways. There's a Shakespearean poem like, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways.
Count the ways.
Everything. They got everything. Of course, they got cars. They got far too many cars. The traffic is horrendous on Monday through Friday because a lot of people live and work downtown. All the new buildings going up, which are like 3 inches away from the next one. I mean, I kid you not, the buildings are right on top of each other. Another, you know, 20-story tower going up right a foot or so, not 3 inches, but a foot or so away. Just hard to believe. With windows. So that your windows are a foot away from the next building's windows. Hi, you can wave.
Right there,
So they're going to sell a lot of Venetian blinds and curtains, I think, on those buildings and those condos. But beyond that, you're right, Metro Transit. Of course, there's the underground. They're expanding that. That's called the path. And you can walk underground one floor down from like one building to another in any kind of weather. Plus, there's all kinds of retail shops down underground, food, selling shoes and clothes and anything you want. You could just stay on that bottom level on the path, and it goes like 10 miles north, 5 miles east, and they're expanding it underground west. I think there's some problems with getting the path extended because it's getting pretty crowded because they still have a tremendous subway system,
mm-hmm.
Which they haven't expanded as far as I can see, but it's pretty much just north and north, south, east, west. There's one main line, you know, that circles up and comes back, you know, and that goes north and of course an east-west one. And so you can go all the way down from the riverfront all the way north up to one of their big shopping centers about 10 miles up and east and west. But they don't have other sidelines that split that up. But how many buses do they have? They got regular buses, diesel powered. They've got hybrid buses. And they've got electric trolleys just like we had in the 1950s in Detroit. Trolleys that are connected overhead by electric lines.
Wow.
But there, so people are using them all. And of course, you could walk too if you choose. So many different ways of transit. I know Detroit just got announced yesterday. Vice President Biden was in town in Detroit.
Yes.
And Detroit did get a grant from the federal government, 50 new buses. They think they can finally get enough buses and apparently enough drivers to put them back on schedule and cover almost all the areas of Detroit. For the people that live there, I mean, if they're going to try to get a job and they can't afford a car, they've got to go with a bus. So I just hope that the cost of riding the bus is going to be somehow subsidized for them, too.
Now, have smart cars also infiltrated Toronto?
They not only have a variety of, you're talking about little rental cars you can pick up one place or another,
right,
but also electric bicycles. Okay. Not just bicycles, but they have whole racks of bicycles that have electric batteries in them, too, to help you pedal faster. You know, so you can go further with less effort, or no effort at all. And they have whole racks of those. And you just you have a card. You at the beginning you have a credit card, and then you get a card that has so many miles or hours or whatever on it. And that's all you need. You take it, you drop it off some other place at some other rack. So those e-bikes were all over town also. Plus, oh yes, a few of my favorite big streets in downtown Toronto. Another reason they're crowded: they have bike paths. They just squeeze the cars into fewer lanes or smaller lanes, and that's one of the reasons for the traffic jam. But they got bike paths going both ways on each side of the major streets.
Wow.
God bless them. Now, not the expressways, of course, but all the other streets, the main routes east and west that the bicyclists want to take. So trying, if you're a pedestrian, you've got to be careful because you might be hit by an electric bike. And they have, you know, I mean, they're supposed to stop at intersections, but sometimes some of these people, or even the ones that are just pedaling themselves, they go pretty fast. So you've got to look both ways, not just for cars, but for the bicyclists.
Wow.
So that was an experience. But great. Everybody has a way. Some allow people to get really good exercise. Everybody has a way to get one place or the other in a variety of costs and in a variety of weather, too. So
At the time when I was there, they would hand you, if you finished the subway route and you couldn't, subway didn't go any further, but the buses did, they would give you a pass that you could use on the bus for the next journey that you were taking.
I think they probably still do that. I've heard of that. Yes. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A flip back on that is when I was in Toronto, one of the reasons I went there, I haven't been there for years, and I wanted to go to my favorite bookstore as an academic and a professor of literature in my first 14 years here at the college, before I graduated to telecom, all that electronic stuff, which we still use books here in the telecom area too, folks. I wanted to go to what they call, it was actually the name of the place, the world's biggest bookstore. And it was really big. I think it was three floors and bigger than most libraries. And whether it was the biggest or not in the world, I don't know. I don't know if they copyright it or whatever, but that's what they called it. And what an experience. Not just used books, not just old books, but new ones. And unfortunately, when I got there, I looked it up. It was closed. It closed last year, March 2014, and that month will live in infamy as the death of the books.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what, Jay?
Yes.
You have a second chance, because this week over at the Dearborn Ice Skating Rink over on Ford Road in Greenfield over there, they're having the AAUW Dearborn Used Book Sale.
Ah, yes, the annual book sale.
Oh, I have picked up such great cookbooks over there, and the novels I can read all winter long, you know.
Very reasonable prices, because they're used books. And
that's going on. Today is the 18th,
right,
from 10 a.m. to 7 over there today, and tomorrow from 10 to 4. And on the 20th, that's going to be the Literacy Day. They're going to be open from 1 to 4, and you can fill up a bag of books for $2 over there, and it's all used books.
I'm not sure if you can bring your own bag or...
I don't know, but they have some fantastic books.
Yes. Well, a lot of them were donated because they actually... The organization that collected the books collected a lot of them from college professors. It's the American Association of University Women, which is very active. There's a chapter here. Certainly, there's one at U of MD, and they always ask all of the professors, all the teachers in Dearborn, to donate from their collections, because most teachers are book oriented primarily and have their own libraries, but at a certain point you've got to get rid of the stuff. There's no room for anything more, and so you'll find a lot of really high quality books, high quality fiction, nonfiction too, including QuickBooks perhaps.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And it is their 64th annual used book sale.
Right, it's a great service to the community. It's recycling, folks, but recycling important ideas and information that's right there in print. No batteries required. It's an amazing thing. And, it's terrible to have to give a plug for books, but I think these days it's probably you have to do it.
Reading reduces stress as well. Sit there with a book, a nice cup of tea.
Yep. You can read as fast as you want to. You don't have to worry about your batteries declining. I got to read faster. My battery's getting low. You know.
Cynthia, where again is this sale happening?
That's over at the Disc. The Dearborn Ice Skating Center, that's at 14900 Ford Road. It's just east of Greenfield Road here in Dearborn.
Yeah.
Great.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so try to get over there. Some people got there probably early yesterday. We didn't get a chance to mention it's upcoming. In fact, it wasn't in the paper until yesterday in the Times Herald. So our show is on Fridays, of course. But, some people get there. I think the early birds have to pay a little more. Because they get the best selection, of course. But there's a lot of books. And even Sunday for their one price per bag situation, it's a great value, great deal. It's a lot of fun. Take the whole family. Wow. Imagine a book, something special. Maybe some of your kids have never seen one, maybe.
Complete collection of Arthur C. Clarke there. Billion years ago when I went.
Oh, that could be thrilling. He's only written, of course, he's passed away now, I think, but has he? I don't know. Somebody has. Oh, Isaac Asimov has passed away. I think Clark. Well, that's one or the other. Anyway, they both have written hundreds of books, fiction and nonfiction. Well, they're mostly known as science fiction authors, but all right. So that's something very important to do here in Dearborn. I'd like to go to a couple of comments from Jim Hightower and Jack Lessenberry. Let me see. I'm going to pick one from each. Jim Hightower, of course, our friendly national populist out of Texas. Unlike most other Texans, you might know, he has a comment here about battling the forces of inequality in Grand Rapids. And then we're going to follow with Jack Lessenberry's comment. Let's see. 600,000 people could lose healthy Michigan benefits. Oh, my gosh. So here's two comments. Jim Hightower, followed by Jack Lessenberry on the new WHFR Journal. Making waves here. WHFR.FM.
Inequality is not a condition. It's a creation. It's produced by thousands of decisions deliberately made by bosses, bankers, and big shots to siphon money and power from the many to the few. We see Wall Street and Washington doing this to us, but the widening and deepening chasm of inequality in America is also the product of decisions that local elites are making every day. Take Grand Rapids, Michigan, a city largely run by a few billionaire families sharing an entrenched laissez-faire ideology. They want no heavy-handed government policies, unless you're poor or working class. Thus, the city powers who find it unconscionable to hike taxes on the rich recently socked low-income bus riders with a 17% jump in fares. For the 27% of the people in Grand Rapids who live below the poverty line, that's a serious chunk of change siphoned right out of their pockets. Then, the board of directors of the city's transit agency slipped a siphon tube into the wallets of their own drivers and mechanics, arbitrarily terminating their pensions. Adding a crude insult to injury, the board simultaneously gave a pay raise to the transit boss, literally stealing from workers to lift the CEO's salary above $200,000 a year. When the workers, who were members of the Amalgamated Transit Union, began leafleting bus riders to oppose the fare hike and pension theft, the arrogant boss and autocratic board threatened to arrest and fire them. This is Jim Hightower saying, luckily, even in Grand Rapids, it's still illegal to exercise your First Amendment rights, so the union won an injunction against this repression. Better yet, the attempted siphoning of money and power has rallied community groups, students, bus riders, and others into a grassroots movement to stop widening the inequality gap and start bridging it.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. I didn't watch much of the Republican presidential debate last night, but listened to some of it while driving. What struck me was that all the candidates talked as if President Obama was the worst thing in our nation's history. Worse than the Civil War, the Great Depression, you name it. Well, I don't propose to get into an analysis of the current administration, but I will assert that there's clear evidence that in one very important way, President Obama has made life better for people nationally and in Michigan. Health care coverage. Yesterday, a few hours before the debate, the U.S. Census Bureau released new data showing that more people have insurance, both nationally and in Michigan, than before the Affordable Care Act took effect. Michigan has improved more than average. That's largely thanks not only to President Obama, but Governor Rick Snyder and the Healthy Michigan Plan, otherwise known as the expansion of Medicaid, to those just slightly over the official poverty rate. According to the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation, the number of adults in our state without any coverage was cut in half, from 14% to 7%, just between 2012 and 2014. Overall, nearly a quarter of a million more people in Michigan had health insurance last year than the year before. It'd be hard to exaggerate how positive this is. Naturally, people are better and happier citizens, better parents and partners when they're healthy, but they're also better workers and employees. I haven't seen any efforts to quantify this, but our more healthy population has to be reducing absenteeism and boosting the productivity of our businesses. Most of the increase comes from the expansion of Medicaid benefits through what's called the Healthy Michigan Plan, which the legislature barely passed 2 years ago. They expanded Medicaid coverage to those making up to about one-third more than the official poverty rate. We aren't talking free health care for the affluent. The most a family of four can earn and still be covered is $32,500 a year. And without this, those folks would have no health care. And right now, the federal government is paying for everything. Michigan won't have to pay anything until 2017, and never more than 10% of the entire cost. But this coverage is seriously threatened. Conservatives forced two waivers into the Michigan bill. The first was approved by Washington, but the second hasn't yet been approved. It would require those getting benefits to pay higher copays or to enroll in a federal health insurance marketplace and lose some Medicaid-provided services, such as dental coverage. Regardless of what you think about that, here's the big problem. Unless Washington accepts the waiver, or the legislature modifies the bill by the end of this year, everybody in the Healthy Michigan Plan will lose all benefits at the end of next April. 600,000 people. It would be devastating for them and for the state. Few have noticed yet, but it's essential this be fixed, and that may be hard. The current legislature seems less sympathetic to health care expansion than the one that barely passed this. It'll be interesting, to say the least, to see what happens next.
So that was Jack Lessenberry. Obviously, his reference to the Republican debate, this was put on the MichiganRadio.org website yesterday, so just one day old. But, wow, 600,000 people in Michigan losing health benefits. Didn't we already get past that? No, not necessarily. That's the way with politics. It's frustrating, but you always have to stay vigilant, because somebody always wants to reverse or change or outlaw something that was already passed that was actually a good idea. And depending on the winds of change, be whatever they may, it could happen, you know, that all these people would be kicked off, unfortunately. Speaking of, and we were earlier anyway, city development, Southgate had a big grand opening, right, of a great facility. Tell us about it, John.
Yes, last Sunday there was a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the Market Center Park in the space of the old Montgomery Ward building. That was demolished in 2012. Market Center Park is Southgate's first event venue created to enhance our commercial district, as well as serve as a social gathering place for current and future generations of Southgate residents and guests, Mayor Joseph Cuspa said. And the festivities Sunday included music by Downriver's Little Davy and the Diplomats, and a bouncy house and Downriver Gymnastics and the Farmers Markets. So there appears to be a very new-looking space in that old shopping center.
I think that's an idea whose time has come. And in fact, I personally, even on this show for the last 3-4 years, have been suggesting that we find an area in, well, West Dearborn I was thinking about, but also East Dearborn would be fine, that could have that sort of permanent roof-covered area. And that's very attractive, that one down in Southgate. I'm not sure how much area it actually covers, but it's a whole plaza, and the idea is to develop activities there and to have some protection from, you know, light rain like we're having today, so that the event can still go ahead. Certainly a performance group, they've got to be protected from light rain, or sure, they can't plug in their amplifiers or so on, even though other people might have an umbrella or not even care about it sprinkling. So that is a wonderful idea. Does it say anything there about the cost of that and how they paid for it in Southgate?
Not in this story, no, sir. No, nope.
That's an issue, because in Dearborn I was told, oh, there's no money for that. Okay. Well, I think it would, for example, the Bryant Library parking lot.
Yes.
Okay. Which is partially used for the farmer's market, which is still continuing for another week or two into October.
Sure.
And that would be ideal. That's how Royal Oak is able to have a farmer's market a lot longer each year than us, because they have a permanent overhead roof. I mean, it's open air on the sides, but got a permanent overhead roof.
I found a little information here, Jay.
Okay, yep.
It says the property, which belonged to Southgate Shopping Center owner Mickey Siskind, was taken down at his expense and then donated to the city for the project.
Well, and of course, he got a tax credit for the donation, but still, that's great. That's great that
sure
it worked out like that. Yeah.
And the brick wall that used to run along the back of the shopping center was taken down at the expense of the Southgate MJR.
So they got a number of partners to work on that.
That sure is. And then the second phase of funding for the park, which has already been received, and further improvements will take place starting in 2016. They will include illuminated walkways to increase the connectivity of the park to Trenton Road and adjoining neighborhoods.
Hmm.
Private investment opportunities are available, of course, for anyone interested in assisting with additional park amenities.
Good idea. I just wonder if there's any anything that could be done similarly here in Dearborn. And of course, we have a city development director, and now we're going to have those downtown development authorities unified, so maybe they'll get some really big ideas that'll benefit the whole community. And I think again, an open air but permanent classy looking roof too over those areas would give multiple possibilities for other activities that would draw people to the downtown areas. Okay.
Sure. Yep.
Couple other things here for the show today.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about Henry Ford College a little bit. We know it best because we're right here.
And
a special new certificate program.
Right.
Yes, Kitty Love?
Randall Knight, our Associate Dean of Social Science Art Fitness Division, told us we have a new one-year recording art certification
mm-hmm.
program.
Yes, certification.
It's going to be coming up in the 2016 winter semester here, which is right around the corner. And it's for music students and non-traditional music students who want to obtain experience in the recording industry, and they will learn to produce and record music.
I just threw the story at her, folks.
Oh,
so
yeah,
what they call cold copy.
Chipping
so
over my tongue.
No,
here.
No one could read it.
Oh my gosh.
Any better when it's just thrown at you. So my apologies, it's my fault there. But
okay.
yes.
Yeah, recording arts certification.
It's a recording arts certificate,
yes,
which should take people, usually certificates, they can get it in about 1 year. I think it might say something about
one
how long it typically would take. Yeah. And it might be 1 year of two or three semesters of probably full-time classes. So how many hours? 30 hours maybe, 24?
No, it did not say the
okay
hours.
Well, you can get more information how?
By going to contact
Randall Knight,
Lay,
of course, but yes.
Yes, Lai is the name, mm-hmm. at Okay, how about this one? ajlai@hfcc.edu. That again is ajlai.
That's right. That's his first initial, middle initial, and last name. Anthony Lay. Anthony J. Lay. So it's ajlai at hfcc.edu. Music Recording Certificate Program. A lot of people here are interested in that. Even if it's not necessarily going to be a job working at a recording studio, it could be a job that they don't need to pay other people money for. If they're an artist, if they're a music artist, they might want to actually try to get into producing their own music themselves.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Prince has done it, right? So, I mean, yeah, he does his own recording. He plays all the instruments in his studio, and then he mixes it all together. About a one-man band.
He's got a couple more bucks than the usual.
Well, I mean, he did this right from the beginning, though. I mean, right when he began. I don't know when he started this one, but it was his approach all the way through. It's only, people might remember some Prince performances on TV or somewhere else over the last 30 years where he has a band. But the band, he would only get them together after, for the live performance. They weren't there in the studio. He did it all himself, which is absolutely amazing. Okay. So, John, what are those three festivals in the area?
They are the River Rouge Days, which are September 17th through the 20th.
Going on now, yep.
Right at West Jefferson Avenue, Memorial Park, right in River Rouge.
Yep.
All the normal programs of carnival, beer tents, music, kids' firehouse, and parade that is on noon on Saturday. Flat Rock has a River Fest this weekend, mm-hmm. September 18th through the 20th. Again, all the food vendors will all be there, a petting zoo, as well as some great music. One great event that's going on throughout the weekend is called the Tour de l'Île, which culminates in a 75-mile bike ride that starts in the Detroit area and continues through Grosse Ile. And there'll be lots of people, entertainment along the routes for that, and that's what I've got so far. Oh, I should say this, Point Mullier Waterfowl Fest is also going on.
Yeah, that's sort of for like hunters and outdoors people, all kinds of
hunters and
bird calling events or something like that.
And people who like cookbooks as well, there'll be lots of cookbooks there.
Well, there you go. Kitty Love raised her hand.
Ray's okay. Cooking will be doing some of the cooking for that from Ray's Market, which is a very fine.
Thank you for that. Always something fun to do, folks. And even though the weather is maybe going to be a little rainy, don't worry about it. So I'm going to do one final story here on the Journal, and we're waiting for Highway 61 to get started. Joanne is on her way in, I think. I saw the phone flash there, so I hope there's not a traffic problem. There's still a problem in West Dearborn. Joanne was telling me they're working on military, and she has to come that way. And so the road construction there is going to go on for a little while longer, so it slows down her route in sometimes. This is a story that I discovered in my notebook that I didn't do, and so it's a ketchup story. No mustard, just ketchup. Yeah, okay, and it's from March of this year from Bridge Magazine, which is not really a magazine, but that's what they call it. It's from the Center for Michigan, and it's the centerformichigan.net or bridgemi.com, same thing. And they have great stories, great journalists, independent news, and this is the story from last March. I'll just summarize the beginning. One of the best-kept secrets in southeastern Michigan is that DTE Energy customers will almost certainly be required to pay over $100 million in expenses for wasted planning for a Fermi 3 nuclear power plant. While Fermi 3 is unneeded, unaffordable, and probably unlikely to be built, and therefore to ever generate any electricity, ratepayers will likely have to reimburse DTE for its poor judgment due to what Jeff Allison, who's the writer of the story, what Jeff Allison calls the nuclear con game. And he says, by con, I do not mean to imply illegality, rather that rules which appear to be impartial unfairly tilt the playing field to favor utilities at the expense of ratepayers. That's you and me, folks. You know, DTE is involved with, in terms of the Fermi, one plant. Now, that failed, nearly melted down back in the late 60s. That has to be kept enclosed, sealed for 100,000 plus years so it doesn't kill all of us in this area, seriously, and contaminate the land for another 100,000 years. Fermi 2 is built right next door to it, down there in Monroe. This is where both of them are. And that plant has had some problems. Like right now, it's closed down. Because last weekend, they discovered a little water in the cooling system, in the wrong place in the cooling system, which is basically to pump water to keep the reactor from melting down and maybe contaminating the soil or the water or the air around here. So they had to close it down, and they did successfully shut it down. But the last time it happened was about half a year ago. So every time it's shut down, guess what? They have to go to other resources, which are actually more expensive and more polluting, like coal. But of course, we pay for it. We pay for the shutdown time. We pay for the repairs of Fermi 2, and we're also paying for their efforts to try to get a Fermi 3. So that's already $100 million. Here's the summary of the nuclear con game from Jeff Allison at Bridge Magazine. Number one rule for nuclear con is that if history is any guide, Michigan Public Service Commission approved utility expenditures are reimbursed whether they actually result in useful electricity or not. That's terrible. So, we're paying rates that might include items that really deserved a little bit more scrutiny. You know, in 1966, as I mentioned, Fermi 1 partially melted down, and Fermi 2 cost much more than originally estimated. And yet we pay for all that, all the overruns, everything. Nuclear con game rule number two practically guarantees utility profit on every Public Service Commission approved capital expenditure. Guarantees profit. Perversely, the more a utility spends, even on cost overruns, the more it may profit. So DTE ratepayers must not only cover the $100 million effort to try to get Fermi 3 going, but possibly millions more in profits, rewarding DTE for its poor decision-making. Nuclear con game rule number three is continuing to give the benefit of the doubt to nuclear utilities like DTE, even though reactors completed in the 1980s and 90s were routinely over budget, and continuing to place the burden of proof on those of us who point out that the nuclear emperor has no clothes. If insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome, it is insane, says Jeff Allison here, to ever expect a nuclear power plant to be built on budget. Independent experts agree that we do not need electricity from Fermi 3. Even if electricity supply were an issue, conservation, wind, and solar are cheaper, can be bought online more quickly, yield lower life cycle carbon emissions, and do not entail the risk of an industry-wide shutdown that would likely happen after a major nuclear accident. If built, Fermi 3 would be unbelievably expensive. So it's something to be concerned about and worry about. It is WHFR Dearborn, and it's now the end of our show, and we hope that Joanne Kraczynska will be here shortly, starting up the blues show, although we have Kitty Love here, who might very well come on shortly just to warm up the microphone for Joanne. And so I'm going to be saying goodbye now, and thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Consider attending in Dearborn Heights the special debate among your council candidates. There's 2 and 3 makes 5. There's 5 candidates for 3 seats. That'll be 7 o'clock at City Council Chambers in Dearborn Heights in your City Hall. And 7:30 p.m., Dearborn City Council meets in the Dearborn Administrative Center, the so-called new Dearborn City Hall on Michigan Avenue, closer to West Dearborn, rather than Easter one this time. All right, that's all for now. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal, and we are going to begin the Highway 61 theme. And so take care out there.